Hello, everyone, and welcome to Me, You, Us, a well-being podcast. It's another Well-Being Wednesday here at Consumers Energy, and I'm your host, Bill Krieger. Today, my guest is Sarah Zuhl. She is the Employee Well-Being Program Lead here at Consumers Energy. So, Sarah, if you'll introduce yourself, we'll get the conversation started.
Thanks, Bill. I'm Sarah Zuhl. I'm, as Bill mentioned, I am leading the employee well-being efforts here at Consumers Energy. I've currently been with Consumers for about a year and a half. Prior to that, I worked with large employer groups across the country in helping them to establish a well-being strategy, identify a partner that they might want to use, and then implementing that strategy. So I've worked with all different types of industries in various states throughout the country. I do have two children that keep me very busy. I have a 15-year-old son and a 12-year-old daughter, and they're both very active in sports, which makes me happy.
Well, 15 and 12, so that's an interesting time because I remember when my children were those ages. I went from being the smartest man in the world to maybe not the smartest man in the world for a little while. But rest assured, it all comes back around because my kids are in their 20s and 30s now, and it's a whole different ball game. But that's great. What kind of sports do they play?
My son plays football, basketball, and baseball. And my daughter plays volleyball, basketball, and softball.
It sounds like you might be a very busy person driving people around.
Yes, I'm looking forward to my son getting his driver's license.
It's funny because I remember my parents saying something similar to that, and I never really understood it until I was a parent. Mm-hmm. Because you had that total fear of them driving, but then there's that relief that they can do a lot of things on their own, and they can even run to the store and get that gallon of milk if you need them to.
Right. I do have to say, though, when COVID hit and everything shut down, you know, including school and practices, I promised myself that I would never complain about driving and taking these kids to and from events because I really didn't know what to do with my spare time.
Well, and I don't know if you're anything like me, but I found myself not leaving the house. You know, I'd like leave the house and think to myself, gosh, I haven't been outside the house in like 4 days. Mm-hmm. How did that even happen?
Right.
I can understand that. Now, my wife works for a different company, so she's actually been going to her office every day as if nothing changed. So sometimes I would take her to work just so I could have a commute.
Yeah. You kind of miss that time.
You do. There's that unwinding when you mm-hmm. are on your way to work and definitely the unwinding on your way home.
Right.
Now I just walk up and down the stairs a few times to unwind. It all works out. So today we're here to talk about the pillars of well-being. And recently, Kathy Hendrian, the Senior Vice President of People and Culture, started having communications around what the pillars are and what does personal well-being mean. And if we think of the pillars as part of a building, they're sort of the foundation that holds up our personal well-being. And we have physical, financial, emotional, social, and professional well-being that are really the stand that hold all of that up. And it really sits on the bedrock of our cultural values as well. So that all ties in nicely together. But what I really wanted to do was kind of dig into what these pillars mean. So I think we can just tackle them one at a time. I think you're absolutely the best person to walk through these with us. So let's talk about the physical pillar of well-being and what does that mean?
Okay, well, for physical well-being, I think it's really important to note that it's not just the absence of disease, meaning physically you're healthy, you haven't been diagnosed with the disease. It's more about your everyday behavior choices, where you're trying to prevent diseases and conditions. You want to make sure you're getting your regular medical checkups, your preventive care, developing healthy habits. Those really not only add years to your life, but they add quality to those years that you're adding on. So while physical is typically what most people focus on, and how they determine if they're well or not, it really is, as you mentioned, just one of those pillars. So I also want to make sure to point out that just because you may not be feeling a symptom or noticing any signs, Those don't always appear to be, they don't always come out. And so a lot of chronic conditions have no signs or symptoms. So that's why it's important to get those annual checkups and that preventive care so that you can truly know if your physical well-being is as good as you think it is.
Well, and that's a great point, making sure that we're taking care of all of those things. It's interesting to me because anytime I see physical well-being, I think of like marathon runners and, you know, people out there pumping weights and all of that stuff. And while that's not something I do, I certainly do make sure that I walk every day and take care of my physical well-being that way. But it's important that, I mean, even within the physical well-being pillar, there are different aspects of that. And I think people many times forget about just having that preventative care to make sure that they're doing okay. Now, the next pillar is the financial pillar. So can you talk us through that a little bit?
So financial well-being is being in control of your day-to-day finances, as well as preparing for the future and ultimately retirement. But when it comes to financial well-being, I would have you consider, you know, do you have a budget in place? Are you following that budget? Are you managing your debt and, you know, being able to pay off that debt? And then do you have a sound plan for saving for retirement?
So financial is a little bit like physical. It's having a plan. It's having regular checkups. It's making sure that you're on the right path with that. And actually, we've had Kendra Grobe on a few times to really give some great financial tips. So for the audience, if you go back just recently and then maybe a couple of months ago, look for the ones with Kendra Grobe to talk about financial well-being. There's some great tips and tricks there as well. Now, the third one is emotional well-being. And so what does emotional well-being really mean?
Emotional well-being is about your thoughts, your feelings, and how you're able to cope with the ups and downs with life. You know, there's not always good times. So how you can cope and deal with the bad times really can help make it more stable with your emotional well-being. So again, it's stress happens, but how we cope with that stress really is what's important.
And so it's a great point because there is no such thing as a stress-free life.
Right.
At some point or another, there's always stress. Sometimes it's good stress and sometimes it's bad stress. But I like your point about it's all in how we deal with it and feel about it and take care of ourselves in that respect. And then, you know, moving on from emotional, the next one is the social well-being pillar. And this one was always kind of a mystery to me until I really got involved in personal well-being. So talk us through social well-being and what does that mean?
Well, social well-being refers to our ability to make and keep meaningful relationships with people, our family, our friends, our neighbors, our coworkers. And I think social well-being has really kind of come to the forefront, especially during this pandemic, where we're social distancing. Maybe we've had to quarantine. And so we really miss that, you know, in-person interaction. But there are a lot of ways, and I think we've done a good job as a society to learn how to overcome that in-person and being able to connect virtually as often as we can. But it social well-being, you know, it could be having those good relationships, but being involved in your community is also part of it. Being a part of your church or your religion. So there's a lot of things that come into social well-being.
When we talk about what's been going on, we talk about social distancing. I've often heard people say that we should put it in the context of we are physically distancing, right? We want to make sure that we're physically distant, but we want to maintain that social togetherness. So you're absolutely right, whether it's being on a Zoom call or during the height of the pandemic, I would meet my grown children in a parking lot and we would have coffee in our cars separately and we roll the windows down and talk. And that was the way we stayed socially connected. So yes, definitely important, especially when times get tough, is to have that social network. And I like what you said about being involved in the community. I could see that being volunteerism and other things like that.
Yes. And I would love for them to change the phrase social distancing.
Well, I think maybe we need to go on a campaign to do that.
Okay.
Maybe that's our next goal. So the final pillar in personal well-being is professional well-being. So talk to the audience a little bit about professional well-being and what that means.
Professional well-being refers to your satisfaction with your work, your attitude about your work, feeling that you can achieve goals within your work life, and making sure that you have the opportunities to choose a career and follow a path of where you see your future.
All right, Sarah. Well, thank you for walking us through all of the pillars of personal well-being. And as we talked about in the beginning, these pillars are really the foundation that hold up our overall well-being. And so if one of those pillars or two of those pillars starts to be a little bit out of whack, it can really impact our overall feeling of personal well-being. So could you maybe tell us about a time where you had one of these pillars that just wasn't where it should be and how that impacted you? And then what did you do to overcome that?
Absolutely. I'm more than happy to share. So this was probably, I'm trying to think of how old my son was, probably 8. So 7 years ago, there had been changes within my current employer, and we were starting a new program, a new department. And things were really stressful. Things were really uncertain. And I thought I was handling it well, but I noticed that my temper wasn't as, it was much shorter than normal. I tended to snap. I wasn't able to leave my work at work. I brought it home with me. Changes in my sleep, which then affected my overall physical health. So it was my emotional well-being that started to impact my social well-being, my relationship with my kids, and my coworkers. It started to impact my physical health. I wasn't eating right. I wasn't getting enough sleep. The wake-up call came when it was in honor of Mother's Day. My son had to fill out, like, my mom's favorite color is... The last one was, I wish my mom, and he put, wasn't stressed.
Oh.
And that brought tears to my eyes, and I realized that if my 8-year-old son notices that I'm stressed, I'm obviously not coping well with it. So it really forced me to kind of put things in perspective, make a list of priorities, and really learn some coping mechanisms on how to handle stress, you know, being okay to ask for help. That's a tough one for me, but it was something I realized that I really needed to do. So, but that kind of shows how if one pillar goes out of whack, it definitely can impact the other pillars.
Well, isn't it amazing how our children teach us things?
Yes.
In the simplest ways. I'm going to be honest with you. People can't see me, but I've got a tear in my eye right now because that really struck home with me.
Oh.
I get that, and I can only imagine how that must have felt. So thanks a lot for sharing that. I think it's important for people to understand that we all have our struggles, and our struggles are real. And so when we share those stories, I believe that can help people in many, many different ways. So we are coming close to the end of the podcast, and I would just love to know if you have anything else you'd like to share with the audience.
One thing I like to remind people when it comes to well-being, because the whole concept of well-being, I mean, you think of the 5 pillars, and then it can be overwhelming. One thing I want to share is for people to realize that it's more important to strive for progress and taking those little steps that will end up leading to big results, and not strive for perfection.
Perfection is many times the enemy of good.
Yes.
And really what we would like is good. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of this, Sarah. It's great to kind of hear where this all comes from, especially from someone with your background and your experience. I think that we should probably do this on a regular basis so we can update the audience on where we're at Consumers Energy with personal well-being, and certainly make sure that we're sharing best practices for our listeners who don't necessarily work at Consumers. So thanks again for taking the time out of your day to be here, and I look forward to talking again.
Thank you. I do as well.
And thank you to the audience for tuning in today. I hope you enjoyed our conversation about the five pillars of personal well-being and will find ways to apply those to your life every day. Remember, you can subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcasting platform and tune in every Wednesday as we talk about the things that impact your personal well-being.